You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Today is Wednesday, April 2nd, 2008, and welcome to episode 13 of the Wells Tech Podcast. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your hosts for our weekly technology conversation and its potential role in your ministry. Good morning, Sally.
Hey, Martin. How's it going there?
Great. Good to be back from the warm climes of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I'm sure it was a little challenging to come back to your desk after a week away.
I haven't seen the sun since we landed in Milwaukee, so that's a little bit depressing. We had 70 to 75 degrees every day last week, and not a cloud in the sky. So we just had a great time. This is our second time. We went about the same time last year, and it just snowed on us. It was about 35 to 40 degrees the whole time we were there, and this was just the complete opposite. We just had it was a little bit above average temperature for there, and just a wonderful area, the dry air, and really historical area, too. You don't think about that when you think about the Southwest, but there are older structures and a lot more history in the Southwest than there is even on the East Coast because of the Spanish influence and Coronado discovering that area and the Indians that were there. Just a lot of things to see and do. We just had a wonderful time. So, but now we're back in wonderful Milwaukee, wondering where spring is, and summer will be here probably before we even get spring. So,
yeah,
but you had some snow over there, huh?
Yeah, I sent my husband off to Minnesota District Pastors Conference yesterday in quite a snowstorm. I feel sorry for all the pastors in the Minnesota District because they had a challenge to get to Marshall, Minnesota yesterday in some serious, wet, heavy snow.
Mm-hmm.
So spring is not here yet.
Okay. Well, we have choices where we would live, and this is where we chose, so we can't complain too much. And there's certainly ministry to be done in the warm weather climates as well as the cold weather climates, right?
Absolutely.
So on the show today, we've got a great lineup. We're first of all going to have a brief conversation about technology that is kind of growing pretty rapidly, and that's Flash, and specifically Flash video, and how that potentially could be used for ministry purposes, for live streaming or for recorded services or events, those kinds of things. We've had some questions on that from some of our listeners, so we're going to chat about that for a little bit. We also had an interview with Rob Cirilla, a missionary in Hong Kong, and how he is using technology for distance learning purposes to train future pastors and evangelists in Hong Kong and Taiwan. So we'll be playing that here in just a couple minutes. Of course, we'll have our picks of the week, our promo items, and our featured Wells musicians. We also have an exciting new feature this week, a contest. So that'll be up a little bit later, so keep listening. We'll tell you how you can join the contest and what you might win by submitting some entries to us. So with that said, Sally, let's talk a little bit of Flash.
Sure. Times have changed, as we talked about many times on our podcast, and just in recent years, Flash has really emerged as a great video delivery source, primarily because there's no player required to view Flash video. I read a statistic that 98% of browsers have the Flash plugin already included with their internet browser software. And so what you're doing by using Flash to deliver your video on the web is delivering it in a way that doesn't hinder your viewers by having to have a particular player on their computer. I was thinking back to convention just a few years ago when we streamed video for the first time, really, at Convention 2005, and we streamed it in Windows Media format. So anybody that was watching that convention needed to have the Windows Media Player on their computer in order to watch our stream. And times have really changed since just that few years ago when we did that project.
Yeah, because video is so prevalent now on the web, it's great to have this kind of format that basically makes it available to every kind of platform, whether you're running Windows or a Macintosh computer or even Linux or some of those other different flavors of operating systems. Flash seems to play well on all of those. Flash is a technology that was originally developed by Macromedia, and that company was bought later by Adobe, which is one of the premier digital companies as it relates to design, certainly, but now video as well. And Flash is a little bit different than what Windows Media uses. It's probably a little bit more efficient. Flash actually got its start in the area of animation, and they worked hard at developing a system that would produce a low bandwidth kind of solution that could be played over the internet, given, you know, the different kinds of broadband or lack of broadband type connections that were out there. So Flash emerges kind of a nice tool to use regardless of what your connection speed was. And now they've moved kind of into the video area, and they're doing some great things, as you mentioned, Sally, with the ability to stream at a fairly low bandwidth. And that's one of the reasons that we're beginning to use it on the Synod level when we're streaming our live events especially. But I think our congregations would be very interested in the technology as well for lots of different purposes, not just streaming live events, but archiving events, also producing promotional kinds of tools as well. Flash video is certainly a file format that is worth considering and not all that expensive to do. There are a lot of different tools that could be used, but all you really need is an encoder. If you're thinking of doing any kind of Flash, you need a free Flash media encoder from Adobe. We'll put a link to that in our show notes, and you can either stream from that or save to what's called an FLV file and then post that in, you know, this is all kind of alphabet soup, but you can, you know, post that in an SWF format on a web page for people to view that, and there's really nothing that the viewer needs to do.
That's right, and the key to it all is just that lightweight format. Anytime you're pushing things out over the internet, you want them to be as small as possible. And with Flash, you retain the quality of the video, but yet push it out at a very small file size. So just a great tool to use for that. You mentioned the free encoder. Obviously, there are more fancy suites of software, and there's a multitude of them out there that allow you to do more with your Flash production. So if you didn't, if you wanted to add things to it, transitions, different pieces of video that you want to put together into one, that kind of thing, you maybe want to invest in some software to do that. Mm-hmm. A couple that we're familiar with, the one I'll mention is Camtasia Studio. That's the one that I use to produce training materials, and it will encode in a great Flash format. It's produced by a company called TechSmith. They're out of Michigan, and we'll include a link to that. And it allows you to record not just video, but also screencast video, and also PowerPoint presentations where you might narrate a presentation or whatever, and then do all of this kind of mixing, putting together the different components of your video into one final product and producing it in a Flash format. It also allows you to produce in other formats as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, along the same lines, Adobe obviously is the kind of the owner of the Flash technology, and they make the improvements to it. Their product is called Adobe Flash CS3, and that's the current release of their editing suite. It's a little bit more expensive than Camtasia, but it depends on what your needs are, and it will allow you to do everything that you mentioned, Sally, but also do a few additional things about conversion, and it's kind of the high end for what people might want to do. So if you're interested in, you know, kind of the higher end tools, if you're doing anything more sophisticated, That would be something to consider. Make sure if you are a church or a school that you're getting nonprofit or educational or charity pricing from Adobe. And a great way to do that or make sure that you're getting the best deal for that kind of software is to go through our ShopWells program at shopwells.net. We have relationships with vendors who are well aware of, you know, our charity status and our educational status, and you can get significant discounts just by going that route. So it's not overly expensive to kind of jump into that. So that would be another thing that you might want to consider. But if you're looking just for encoding, you know, getting recordings of your events or your services or Bible classes or school events, you know, the free stuff works really well. The Flash Media Encoder that I talked about, it's Flash Media Encoder 2 that works real well, you know, for that. There are also some other standalone players if you're looking to just view FLV files, for instance, and we'll put a link to those in our show notes as well. Wikipedia has a great article on Flash Video, so if you want to get a little bit more comfortable with the technology and see if it's for you, that would be a good read for you as well.
And one thing I wanted to mention is if you have your videos in a different format, so say you have a library of videos already encoded in Windows Media format, for instance, there are websites which will take your previously encoded video and convert it to Flash by just uploading it to their website, and they send you a link or give you a download link where you can download the Flash equivalent of your video. I'll include links to a couple of those, FLV Encoder and MediaConvert.com, and they're free services, and they take AVI, Windows Media, MPEG, and QuickTime versions of video and convert it for you to Flash.
Great. Most of you are probably already familiar with Flash, whether you know it or not. YouTube, if you view any kind of video on YouTube, that's all Flash. Google Video, that's all done in Flash. Something that you might want to check out if you're interested in live web streaming, two particular options. One is Ustream. That's ustream.tv. It's a free service that you can use to encode and publish, you know, live web streaming. You kind of have to put up with their little Ustream logo on the screen. If you want to go to the next level, the Synod has a program, a web streaming program, through a vendor that we've negotiated with for pretty low rates, and you can find out more about that at wells.net/jump/web streaming, and then you've got all the tools there necessary to encode either in Flash or in Windows Media. You can pick your Flash player, all kinds of options, and determine what kind of bandwidth you want to use and what kind of quality video you want to publish, as well as audio. Up next is our interview with missionary Rob Cirilla, and we're talking with him about what they're doing in the area of video conferencing and distance learning at Asia Lutheran Seminary. Let's take a minute, listen to Rob. We'll be right back. With us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is missionary Rob Cirilla from Hong Kong. Welcome, Rob, and thanks for joining the show.
Very happy to be with you. Thanks, Martin.
We are talking from halfway around the world, so there may be a little bit of a delay. So thanks to our listeners for bearing with. First of all, Rob, what position are you currently serving? And maybe you could help our listeners by maybe describing a day in the life of missionary Rob Cirilla.
Okay. Thanks, Martin. I serve as a missionary here in Hong Kong. My primary role is working with Asia Lutheran Seminary. Asia Lutheran Seminary was set up about 3 years ago to assist our efforts to train more Lutheran workers here, especially in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and other parts of Asia. So what do I do every day? Well, I go over to my office, look at my computer a lot, plan some lessons. For example, tomorrow I do a course on homiletics. We have about 6 students in the homiletics course. That runs for about 3 hours in the morning. In the afternoon, I'll do work with preparation. Also, we have English teachers placed in various places in Asia, so we carry on correspondence with them. I also assist in a congregation that our daughter church here in Hong Kong runs. So I have quite a few different hats on right now.
How many students in Asia Lutheran Seminary at this point, and where are they, if you can tell, where are they located?
Well, that's a good question. We have two full-time students right now, but we have probably 50 to 60 part-time students. We are training all levels of theological workers here in Hong Kong, those who will be the future pastors, those also who want to serve the Lord better in their own congregations, so they're taking higher level theological courses from us. The students we have right now are primarily based in Hong Kong, although we do have about five students in neighboring Taiwan, where we use Mandarin language to work with them. And we have a few others spread out here and there. One student was transferred to Japan, and so we use distance learning with him, a Skype setup with him to make sure that he comes in on the classes. And there's other places in Asia where we're also starting to do some things.
I understand that Hong Kong especially is very technologically savvy. Are you able to make use of technology there with the Asia Lutheran Seminary?
Yes, you're totally correct. Hong Kong's a city of about 7 million in a very small, densely populated island and Kowloon, new territories over here. So internet connections are good. People themselves, a lot of them have computers, a couple cell phones. And so for us, like setting up Skype or setting up conference calls, doing video conferencing, is not a big problem. And not just here, Taiwan, of course Japan, even in some of the other areas where internet connections aren't always so good, those are improving quickly. And parts of Asia, there are even more internet users than there are in the States. So we do like to use technology to extend our reach. We've got some very interesting plans. We have a lot of support from people in the States who want to see us use more technology, make use of the manpower that we have. Maybe I can tell you a little about that. Right now we have the director of the seminary, John Lorenz, myself, and then we have anywhere from one to two, maybe three part-time professors who come over for a short term from the States. Maybe they come over for 3 weeks, preferably 3 to 4 months, and right now Pastor Carl Gergel is over here for a year, filling in a very important part of dogmatics for us. So we make use of full-time and also part-time professors, and we hope in the future that we can have some of the professors come to us digitally through the internet, through video conferencing, perhaps from some of our other seminaries, perhaps in the States, perhaps in other parts of the world. It's part of a bigger vision that we call a global theological training.
Specifically, what kind of technology do you have in place as far as hardware and software to make this happen?
Yes, we have in our classroom on the 16th floor, we of course have a digital projector. We have a full Sony video conferencing unit set up there. We have a DVD recorder that records all of our classes. We have a very nice camera set up with probably two or three different angles that we can use. Then on our software, on the hardware, I should say, we also have a T1 line that's set up that's not as expensive as in the States. It's a pretty good deal. And then on our software side, we tend to use either Skype or VC. Skype we generally use for one-on-one with the video. But with Skype, we've been able to do at one time up to four different locations in Taiwan, where they can see each other, we can see them, we can hear each other, share in conversation, and really,
Skype or
that's
with
VC.
VC.
That's with VC.
Yes. VC, right. Mm-hmm. So everybody can see each other and hear each other, and this is all over the internet. There's no telephone calling going on with that kind of technology.
That's correct. All through our internet at the same time, and And our Taiwan people, they don't have really high-speed connections, but we're still able to do it. And all they need is their notebook, probably a built-in camera either in the notebook or an external camera, a decent sound system. We found that sound is really important. And then we go from there.
How long are these sessions that you have with your video conferencing?
Ask the students, they might say a little too long, but we do try to give them the full course that that, for example, our remote students would get the same course that our Hong Kong students would get. So that would be a 3-hour course via the internet, and it's pretty amazing. We've had a few glitches, but for the most part, we've been able to get through 3 hours with no problems.
And how have your students responded to that? Are they pretty comfortable in that setting, or was there a time, you know, kind of a period of time where they had to kind of warm up to the idea?
Actually, there was a bit of momentum for it. What they saw is a chance to lower their travel time, still get the seminary education, and try out the new technology. That was good. After the initial honeymoon period got over, it was kind of like, well, it's not quite as exciting as being in the class. You're looking at a screen. Some of them have just a computer screen. Others use perhaps a projector to have a little larger image. But generally, they're generally pretty happy with it. I would say probably our big challenges would be how to get discussion going, especially on different remote locations. That's probably one of the big challenges of the technology right now.
And how do you overcome that? Do you have to somehow intentionalize the discussion process where you're asking discussion type questions and waiting for feedback, or how is that working?
That's right. It's kind of learning a different way of doing it. You need times when the students can just discuss among themselves, because in all of this, I should say that we are running, most of the professors only speak English, will run either a Cantonese or a Mandarin translation, oral interpretation at the same time. So besides the distance, you also have the language. So we try to get the students to join in discussion and then try to have a spokesman share, and then the spokesman from the different locations try to react to each other. So part of it's the technology. I think a big part of it also is how you redo your learning style or your teaching style to adapt to that situation.
Interesting. You mentioned a kind of a global vision for all the world seminaries. Are there other world seminaries that are doing similar things, or are you tying into the seminary in Mequon for any of the classes of this type?
Yes, it's just beginning. While one of the professors was here in Hong Kong, he had some classes in Sweden, and he started having classes there. So in the Biblicum in Sweden, there's already interest, and we've already been doing things. There is interest on the world level, especially with times of budget constraints and the technology that is available to see what can we deliver courses to a wider range of students. The seminary in Mequon is interested in this, and we're hoping that here at Asia Lutheran Seminary we'll be able to give them an opportunity to do a live class with us. Their evening would be our morning, so if we can get a professor to try. I should say, too, that one thing that we found that is helpful is once the students have some kind of relationship or understand or know the teacher, the technology isn't quite as important, or the being there. The technology, just as long as you have a clear sound, the student is going to be listening and participating. And it's nice to have visual clues, of course, from the video. But if there's a relationship there already with the professor, I don't see a big problem with the distance learning that we're using.
I would assume that would be key, where it would probably help to have met and spent some time face-to-face before you jump into the video conferencing arena, so you can kind of get comfortable with each other and know what to expect and get a little bit more social and friendly within the context of the video conference itself. You're not meeting each other for the first time online, basically.
That's exactly right, Martin, because it's a big difference. We've had about seven professors here from the States, and teaching with Taiwan, most of them went over to Taiwan first and then came back and either finished off courses or did a new course simply through the internet, and that's worked. We've had one man who tried to do it without, we just couldn't arrange it with the amount of time we had, and I thought the results were not as ideal as they should have been, so we're trying to keep to that principle of meeting face-to-face and then continuing the program via distance learning.
Are there any other technology avenues that you're pursuing besides the video conferencing that are going to assist you in your efforts?
Yes, we're trying to figure out better how we could use the DVDs that we make. All of our classes are recorded. We're going to have a full set of DVDs. They do come with a Cantonese translation, so if you want to do some Cantonese theology work, we've got a whole set of DVDs for you. But we're trying to see what can we do to make these available on a wider basis, and maybe even so the how to use the DVDs. Second one would be kind of what we're doing now with just a good audio recording, a podcast of some kind. Would that be something that we could use? MP3, everything we do, and then make that available. That's another avenue we're thinking of using.
A lot of our listeners, Rob, are obviously not in World Missionary settings. They're pastors and teachers with stateside here in traditional, quote unquote traditional congregations. Can you see technologies like this being any assistance to those types of ministries in our churches and schools?
Well, I think it would be a possibility on certain courses where transportation might be something that is holding back, some congregations from having more attendance or better attendance at Bible classes. What if you could have a Bible class and still have a core group of people there, and then people who could dial in from a distant location? I could see that as a possibility. As long as you would have some kind of thing where, you try your best to have face-to-face, because I really think that's where spiritual formation and learning probably takes place best. But if you can't get the time or you have distance problems, I would say that would be a way. Why not have all classes broadcast? Maybe you need a password or something like that, but why not make them available for people? One more choice in your Bible class delivery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how technology is making the world smaller and smaller and flatter and flatter, and ministry certainly is a beneficiary of those kinds of things as well, as we are challenged by cost and distance and time even, and you're able to make use of these to train future pastors and teachers and church workers in a way. Maybe it's not as ideal as face-to-face, but it certainly is better than not training at all.
Mm. Yes, that's for sure. That's one of the things we're even thinking of, as I mentioned before, about the global theological effort, is that for world missions, we want to have national theologians who can hold their own with the original languages and with all the different phases or the branches of theology, and how to train these kind of people. We do have a lot of good people spread out around the world, but we have an idea of perhaps an African teaching an Asian something about systematics, maybe an Asian teaching some European about some kind of church history or something like this, that you get a not only just a better use of your resources, but you get a sense of interdependence, of using the gifts that God has placed around the world to help train the next generation at the very highest level, perhaps master's, perhaps even a doctor degree through distance learning.
Opening a lot more doors than we had, just even a few years ago, isn't it?
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Rob, thanks so much for your time, and may the Lord continue to bless your work there in Hong Kong and around the world as you're reaching out, not just locally there, but distance is really not an issue at this point at all. So thanks again for your time and sharing those thoughts with us. Again, may the Lord continue to bless your ministry there.
You're very welcome, Martin, and thank you so much for the chance to share a little with your listeners.
Our pleasure. Sally, it was good for Rob to join us. He's got a busy schedule. We logged in early in the morning, or fairly early in the morning, and which was his evening. So he cleared some time, kind of late in the evening, to talk with us about what they're doing with technology. Some exciting stuff and uses for it as they're training future pastors and missionaries and evangelists there, all the way around the other side of the world.
Absolutely. I kind of had to pinch myself to realize I was talking to someone on the other side of the world. That's amazing. And we did it for free using Skype, which is just amazingly cool. And again, just a wonderful example of how technology can be a servant to your ministry efforts. And that's what we like to see.
Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick of the week?
I do. Mine is kind of an odd one. It's not a particular tool that you'd use, but rather a blog read that I'd wanted to point you to. It's called The Top 50 Open Source Alternatives to Proprietary Software, and it really ties into the conversation we had last week about Web 2.0 tools. There are many, many tools available out there, and this kind of categorizes them based on different office suites, productivity tools, communication tools, graphic programs. It's written on a blog called WHDB, which is your daily dose of World Wide Web goodness. So amazing links to some really cool free open source products that are out there that you can make use of, and really parallel many of the fee-based products that are available. And so I'll make sure and include a link to that in the Picks of the Week area.
There's a lot of free stuff out there, but it's sometimes difficult to know what's worth spending time downloading and learning, and what's going to be around for some period of time. You don't want to get involved with something that's not going to have very good support or a lot of developers working on. So take a look at that website. I think there's some good stuff there. My pick of the week is Audible.com. Audible.com is a service that is designed for listeners like ours, I suppose, Sally, who like to listen to podcasts. This is a website that's been around, I think they just celebrated their 10th anniversary, so they were pretty early into the Internet. And basically, they are a site that sells audio content. Many thousands of books that have been now narrated and made available on the site are available for download. This is a fee-based service. It's I believe there's different levels that you can join at, $10, $15, $20. And for that money, you get credits. And each week or each month, you can use so many credits to download pieces of content. They have abridged and unabridged content, so if you don't want to listen to an entire book or novel, they have abridged pieces of content that maybe are only 2 hours versus a 6 or a 7 hour read. I typically download the unabridged because I like the whole book, but all the classics are there. I've been listening to all the C.S. Lewis books, Tolstoy, all the Jane Austen books. There's all kinds of things that are available there. There's religious content. There's content for young adults, for kids, Shakespeare. All of those things are there. So if you prefer to listen, and if you've got, let's say, a drive time or a commute that you'd like to fill your time with, other than listening to the Wells Tech podcast, you have you have options there on Audible.com. I think a really good value, and get a little bit more well-read just by clicking on a link, downloading it to your iPod or your MP3 device, and listening to some of the Audible content. It's not just books either. There's magazines. There's newspapers, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, all kinds of content, and they're adding more all the time. So if you can't find something to listen to there, you've got very, very narrow taste. So it's there's a ton of stuff there. So Audible.com. Sal, you familiar with Audible?
I am. I've had a subscription at Audible for a while and enjoy many picks that are flavored for my children to listen to as well. You know, you mentioned the C.S. Lewis, but there's a wide variety of youth and children-oriented books as well, and we do a lot of listening in the car.
What's great about it is you've got a library there, and once you've downloaded it and deleted it, you can always go back to your online library and re-download it. So whatever you've purchased in the past is going to always be available to you. You can load it up on, I don't know what, there's a limit, and I think it's maybe 4 or 5 devices, so you can put it on multiple devices, but just a great service, easy to search, you know, just a ton of stuff there. So audible.com. Mm-hmm. Our Wells.net feature of the week is next. Sally, what do we have?
Well, when I'm telling people about Wells.net, this is the first thing I like to share. So I thought it was time I shared a little information about jump words on Wells.net with our Wells Tech audience. Jump words are an easy way to navigate the Wells.net site. And I usually stun people when I say that Wells.net has over 75,000 pages of content. So lots of things there for you to get to, and jump words make it really easy. There is a jump word box in the top toolbar of every Wells.net page, and you can just simply type in a word and be taken directly to the page that's associated with that word. And what's cool about it is even if you don't know what the jump word potentially might be, you can just start typing what you think it might be related to, and a list of jump words that relate alphabetically to what you're typing will display for you. So if you're interested, for instance, in worship resources, you might start typing the word worship, and you'll actually see a full list of different jump words that have the word worship in them and be directed to various pages that are featured related to worship resources. If you see that list and you're still not sure, you can hover your mouse over the list and a brief description will pop up that tells you about the page that's featured with that jump word. And also at the end of that list, a link to the jump word index shows up. So you can get to an index of all of the jump words on the Wells.net site and search on that page as well. And finally, one of the nicest features with jump words is that a companion URL goes along with the jump word. And by that I mean you know that you have a certain web address that goes along with each jump word, and it's wells.net/jump/, and whatever the jump word is. We use those jump word links a lot in our show notes on the Wells Tech podcast. And once you learn, you know, that you can find, for instance, the web streaming resources at Jump Word Web Streaming, it's easy to kind of file away in your memory banks what that jump word is, and you can send people to that page really easily by using that companion web address or URL of wells.net/jump/web streaming. So jump words are just an excellent way to jump around the website. You could guess that the Wells alphabet soup is well represented. Yes. With our jump words. You know, every area of ministry and support, if you're a true Wells person, you know that BWM stands for Board for World Missions, and that jump word exists as well as World Missions. You know, so there's multiple ways to get to some of our featured pages on the site, but just a great and easy way for Wells people to guess, you know, how to find the resources they're looking for on the website. So take advantage of that jump word box and the jump word URLs.
Great, Sally. We do our best at Wells.net to make it as easy to find information as possible, but with 75,000 pages of content, that's not always possible. So two of the best tools that are available on Wells.net to find information are those jump words, and that's where I would spend, you know, the first few minutes if you're looking for something, and then also that search box, and that's up there at the top as well. So between those tools, you should be able to find what you're looking for. If not, let us know, and we'll try and find it for you. Our promotional section is jam-packed this week, Sally. One thing that I wanted to point everybody to this week, and I mentioned it at the top of the show, is a contest that we're running on the Wells Tech Podcast. And what we're looking for from each of our listeners, if you're so inclined, is what are your top 3 favorite software tools? And those we're looking for should be free. So if you use a tool that you've downloaded, some kind of either open source, as we mentioned earlier in the show, or you know whatever it is, you know, anything that's free that you perhaps couldn't live without, we'd like your top three. We need three of them for you to qualify for the contest. Maybe give us a little bit of a description and a web link if there's a place that we can download them and take a look at them. Well, we've got a location on our Wells Tech podcast website for you to enter that. The contest is going to run through April. The prize is a 1 gigabyte Wells Technology branded USB thumb drive. So certainly worth the price of admission, which is free. We're going to do a drawing on our May 7th show. And we will announce who the winner is, and you have to be listening to hear your name announced on the show, and then contact us within a week by sending us an email, and we will send you the 1 gigabyte USB thumb drive. Again, that is your top three favorite free software tools. You can submit your entry on wellstech.wells.net. Just one entry per person, please, and we will announce the winner of the show on our winner of the contest on our May 7th show.
I'm looking forward to that show because we're also going to discuss all these entries that we received. It'll be real interesting to see what the most submitted software tools are, and maybe I'll find some new ones that I haven't used yet.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for that viewer or listener participation, and hopefully we can all benefit from your suggestions and ideas. So go to wellstech.wells.net today and enter the contest.
Very good. I also wanted to share something new that's on the Wells Tech website. It's along the right-hand side in all of our different links and things that we provide, and it's a compilation of all of our picks of the week. We've put together a single web page that has links to all the different picks of the week that Martin and I discuss in each weekly show. So check that out. You'll find a link in the right sidebar of our Wells Tech website.
We've heard from a couple of our listeners this week or over the past few weeks. Sally, what are we hearing in our community feedback section?
Well, first I wanted to mention an email I received from Brent Nimmers. He's a member of Atonement in Plano, one of those tech guru kind of guys down there in Texas. And he pointed me to the Google Tools for Nonprofits page. It's at google.com/nonprofits. And Google's just put together a suite of their tools that would be real useful for nonprofit organizations to make part of their web presence or whatever. It's not anything necessarily new, but also just kind of pulling it together and featuring things that would be useful for nonprofit organizations. So we'll make sure and include a link to that in the show notes, and thanks to Brent for sharing that with us. The other thing I wanted to mention was an interesting discussion that's occurring on the Wells Tech Listserv. If you aren't familiar with our Wells Tech Listserv, it's a community of Wells members who have that technical bent to them. Maybe they're the tech contacts for their school or church, or they just have an interest in furthering technology in their congregation. And it's free to subscribe to the Wells Tech Listserv, and basically it's an email type conversation that goes on, and there's online archives that are searchable and that kind of thing. Anyway, out on the Wells Tech Listserv, they've been talking about school computer labs, particularly using the technology called thin clients, which is basically having dummy-type machines that use a Linux-based operating system, a free operating system, and many of the open source type resources that we've talked about here, so things like OpenOffice for Office suite of productivity tools, and basically making use of a lot of free software resources on machines that don't have a lot of hardware requirements and a lot of maintenance associated with them, and sharing information using a pretty heavy-duty server in the process. So lots of interesting discussion around this. If you're looking at how to best equip your school computer lab, it's certainly an option that you might want to look into further, and there's good discussion and description of what some of our Wells Tech subscribers are doing in their own school computer labs. So check it out in the Wells Tech Listserv archives.
Thanks, Sally, and thank you, listeners. Please keep those comments coming in. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to share your thoughts and comments on the show. To close our show, as we normally do, we feature a Wells artist. This is a new group called In His Service. Just a reminder, anybody, any of our listeners who are also musicians who'd like maybe your music featured on the Wells Tech podcast, let us know. We'd love to feature your music as well. We have a growing list. You notice that we rotate through them, and so let us know if you'd like your music to, if you would allow us to play your music on our Wells Tech podcast. In His Service is a group of two ladies, Pat Backus and Valerie Floater. Their website is www.adagioconcepts, it's A-D-A-G-I-O concepts.com. We're going to be listening to a song from their album In Our Hearts, Praise God From Whom All Blessings Flow. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next week.